Okay. Are we all back?
Yes.
Oh,
okay, great. Okay, before we get started with our presentation, can I ask if there are any announcements? I have a number if there aren't any others. Okay, well, first of all, I want to remind everybody that AGU is the deadline for submitting session proposals is in April, and we are going to have use our April or our March 12th telecon to discuss this. I'm going to send this email out to the various other climate-related listservs that I have, but I just want to remind everybody that if you're interested in convening a session or participating in convening a session, let me know. I will put, I've started a Google Docs, which is just accumulating the ideas and the people for right now, and I'll put a link under the March 12th date so that people can go and see that. And at first, I'm going to have it just so people can view it, but then I'll ultimately open it up so people can add to it. But then we will have that conversation on the 12th. So that was one thing. Also want everybody to be aware that the National Research Council's Climate Change Education Roundtable is having a workshop on March 14th, Climate Change Education, Preparing Current and Future Business Leaders. And people can register to go, and people can call in and participate remotely. And the link to register or to get the information about the agenda and the phone numbers to call in are on their website. I think if you search Climate Change NRC Climate Change Education Roundtable Business, you'll get to that page. Another thing that I wanted everybody to know is going on is a number of us were involved in a teleconference last week around earth science professional development. And basically everybody, now that we've gone through the process of looking at the next generation science standards, it's very clear to everybody that to make these effective, there's going to be a significant professional development component involved. Anna was involved in drafting the beginnings of a proposal to have a workshop on this. And then Frank Niepold and Dan Barso pulled together a teleconference last week to talk about it, in which Susan Burr was on and Roberta Johnson. It turns out that NESTA was also drafting the beginnings of a proposal for such a workshop. So it's clear from a lot of avenues that this is going to be something that's really needed. So there'll probably be down the line a workshop around how to go about professional development. This is more generally earth science, not explicitly climate science, but it is very relevant to our community. So other people who have not been involved in the conversations would like to be, let me, or I mean, Anna's on the phone, so you can let her know also, and we will get you in the loop.
Great.
And then the last thing I wanted to mention is last week we talked about that we were going to try to get together a survey for the Climate Literacy Network, which we are moving forward on changing the name. We just sort of need to touch all of our bases first before we make that official. But that aside, to get a better sense of the use of the Climate Literacy Network, how people are using it, and what activities and teachers they find useful, and we are putting that together, and that will happen soon. So Anna and I are working on that together. So those are all the announcements I have. Anna, are there any other announcements? Okay, well, if not, we will move on to our presentation. We have Peg Steffen and Bruce Morovic. Is that the way you pronounce it?
Morovic.
Giving us a talk today. Peg is a former teacher with 25 years' experience in teaching biology, physics, astronomy, geology, and environmental science. She was an Albert Einstein Distinguished Educator Fellow at NASA in 2000, and she became a program manager there and started the NASA Explorer Schools Program. And then since 2006, she's been an education coordinator for NOAA's National Ocean Service, and she's been participating in the Climate Literacy Network for quite a while. Bruce Moravcik, has been with NOAA since 1999, developing all kinds of online materials and workshops for students and educators that convey information about the ocean, coastal, and earth science research and technology of the National Ocean Service. And so they are going to give us a presentation today on NOAA's Climate Stewards Education Project, and hopefully everybody's accessed the slides, which are on the website. So with that, I will turn it over to Peg and Bruce.
Hi everyone. I'm going to start out, and then I'm going to pass the torch to Bruce, who will also fill in. And Bruce, you feel free to jump in it whenever you want to, earlier too. We do quite a few presentations and we tag team it. So I'm not going to go into the importance of climate change because everybody that's on this call knows about that. But we do think at NOAA that we have a key role in helping young citizens understand and to understand the magnitude of global change, and then to make sure that they know where to get information and what's going to come down the road. And so many years ago, we started a project called NOAA Waterways, which was actually a small teacher advisory board that we brought together on a monthly basis to give us some feedback on the kinds of products and information that they would like to have in the classroom. And they kind of informed, several years of that, informed our development of this NOAA Climate Stewards Project. And so this was actually started 3 years ago and has grown to become a cross-NOAA project. And one of the reasons that we're doing this is that NOAA does have a very broad mandate to educate about ocean, coastal, Great Lakes, and atmospheric science and stewardship. This project really does emphasize the stewardship part of that. While NOAA has a huge part in collecting and archiving and making predictions about climate and climate change, we also have stewardship is a very prominent part of our NOAA Education Strategic Plan. And so that is one of the hardest things, I think, that at least federal agencies have had to go towards. So we've tried to build in a stewardship component of that, and we're finding some very nice results as we work through this pilot phase of it. The first slide, I think, is an interesting quote from a sixth grade student. It's always amazing to me how knowledgeable young people are about present environmental issues, and that this is an example of a young student who, in going through some of our work with our teachers, made this comment, and it was passed on to us. And I think it's something that we would like many adults to know about. If you go to the second slide, shows you our fairly new oceanservice.noaa.gov website presence for the Climate Stewards Project. And if you'd like more information, you can go there, and there's also more information about some of the things we're going to talk about, including what we do and what we have had as successes in some of our stewardship projects. Bruce, do you want to say anything more about this website?
No, you're doing great.
Okay, all right. All right, let's move on to slide 3. This is the basic premise for the NOAA Climate Stewards Project. We are wanting to help educators, and this is formal and informal educators, to understand concepts of climate, to know where to access and assess the scientific credibility of information, and then to help them make some informed and responsible decisions, and especially, as I mentioned before, the stewardship action. We want them to do something in their community or their classroom. So this project really provides opportunities for state and regional education partners to work together and then to help inspire their youth to pursue some careers in STEM as well, because a lot of them come into contact with some of the scientists that are involved in this work. The nice thing about this is that it's a very diverse group of people, as you'll see on later on when Bruce talks about who we are and where we are. But what I wanted to just say to you is that rather than having a homogeneous group of educators, we've purposely decided to have a very heterogeneous group of educators. So we have teachers that teach kindergarten, and we have teachers, faculty members from community college and higher ed. We have people from museums, science centers, and aquaria. We have a very wide range of educators in this project, and the strength of that is that everybody brings a little different perspective to the climate conversation. And so we found that this project is richer for having this heterogeneous mix. And some of the suggestions that are shared, teachers go back and use however they can with their certain population of either students or adults. So I just wanted to make that point that we have purposely got a real mixture of educators, and it's a lot of fun, actually. Slide 4, this is what we provide. We provide the sustained professional development. We provide them with information about geography-based teaching and some collaborative tools, a lot of digital resources, online resources especially. We share, we have multiple tools from across federal agencies and nonprofit groups that we've exposed them to. And we also help them find some teaching applications that are useful in their particular scope of work. The whole idea is to provide them with enough information that they can go back and use it however they need to. So this is a project that's not prescriptive in any way. They have a lot of latitude in what they can choose. We do have monthly webinars, as Bruce will tell you about, and that's where all of this is delivered. The whole idea, too, is that we want to help increase their confidence in understanding climate science and climate change by providing some deeper content. So a lot of the professional development that you'll hear about is to deepen their knowledge about certain aspects of climate and ideas about how they can bring that into the classroom. And then we also want to give them lots of ideas on how to do a stewardship project, and then also to measure the impact of that stewardship project. So we're going to tell you a little bit also about some of the evaluation results that we've gotten. The fifth slide talks about our leadership team, and Bruce, you lead that, so I'm going to turn this over to you.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Peg. While Peg and I, who sit in the National Ocean Service with National Ocean Service Education, act as the administrative leads for the program, we do have significant involvement from many other groups across all of NOAA. As you can see here, all of these organizations do provide us with guidance and support through the leadership team, which meets regularly, also provide us with access to resources whenever we are able to. We appreciate their assistance with financial resources. But as you know, those are somewhat limited these days. But we do get a lot of assistance from them, and also through their linking us to various education networks that we are able to sort of extend our reach to. And as part of that reach, as you can see from slide 6, and Peg, was there anything else you wanted to say about the leadership team?
No. I just one thing. They also provide us with money.
Yes, they do. They do provide us with funding. One thing that we can say is that the scope of this program is currently limited, really purely by resources that we have, and really nothing more. We find that we have an overabundance of enthusiasm from both the educators, the participants in this program, as well as from the members of the leadership team who really are quite active and enthusiastic about it. As far as our program reach, we find now, in this year, 2013, we have 200 educators who are in 46 states, the District of Columbia, as well as Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands, which is great. Because of the great sort of geographic dispersion of all of our educators, as well as Peg mentioned, the heterogeneity of the educators ranging from formal and informal elementary school through university, we've found that something that's been particularly helpful for us in communicating and working with all these educators is that we have divided up the United States into six primary regions, and we have regional leaders who engage the educators at the very minimum on a monthly basis, but quite often more than that, both through teleconferences, online chats, and personal emails, and providing recommendations and assistance with an advisement on professional development, stewardship projects, and other opportunities. If we go to our next slide, slide 7, we have really a presentation that we like to offer to the educators in the project to show them this sort of very circular and iterative process that we hope to engage the educators in, so that when they come into the project, we're providing them with professional development resources for them to take advantage of. Once they've completed a requirement during their first year of minimum number of hours, 15 in this case, their focus is then to design a stewardship project with measurable outcomes. And we do have an outside evaluator who has been wonderful in assisting some of the educators who are not quite as facile with evaluation and assessment on developing their measurable outcomes for their projects. Then many times what we tell them is that we want this measurable outcome to hopefully link to a decrease in a carbon footprint, either working with their classes, their whole schools, members of their community, but at a level at which that they feel comfortable. And then following the implementation of their stewardship projects, which will hopefully demonstrate results, and this can take measurable forms, various forms, they're presenting these results to the rest of the educators. And we hope that those other educators and new educators will learn from this process and help them to develop their own projects, or even to build on projects that others have done. We do not ask that climate stewards necessarily all develop independent projects, but we do want the projects that they implement to sort of have their own personal spin on them, depending on where they live or their circumstances, but that they be thoughtful and effective projects that are working to mitigate effects of climate change, reduce carbon footprints, things of this nature. From that process, if you go to slide 8, we do have our expectations for our climate stewards. They're completing a certain number of professional development hours during their first year, and then following that first year, for each additional year, they're completing additional professional development hours. The one thing that's very important to note about this program is that we do not have a prescribed curriculum of professional development contact experiences or hours. We recognize that, and our intention is that we have educators that are coming in at many different levels of understanding and with many different areas of interest. However, they are all interested in becoming more knowledgeable about weather and climate and climate change and its impact. And our intention is that we will provide the widest breadth as well as depth of resources that we are able to, as well as guidance, and that they will self-direct themselves to resources, of course, with some advisement from us if they ask it, that will help them to sort of reach their own personal professional development goals.
Can I ask a question? I just was wondering, these professional development trainings, is this all provided by you, or can they get this professional development anywhere that they, or some other programs that you might know about but might not be running?
Oh, good question. I was going to actually get to some of that in a bit, but I can talk about some of that now. Professional development can take many different forms. One form that it takes is we have a monthly webinar in which we have speakers, both scientists as well as educators, who focus on conveying a specific area of climate change science, as well as educators who provide information on educational resources or pedagogy. That's sort of one way that they can get this professional development. Also, we have lists of recommended webinar archives that individuals can take from NSTA, as well as from other sources. I know that I believe it's OSU has a wonderful sort of series, and there are other series of webinars that come out. One of the things that we ask is that whatever professional development that they do take, is that they're coming either from a and Peg, please chime in, of course, at any point, from a federal institution, a federally funded institution, an accredited university, or an organization which is in partnership with NOAA or another federal organization. So we do provide them with quite a bit of sway. If there are, and as well as if individuals attend conferences or presentations, or even we have a Climate Stewards Book Club, we'll provide professional development hour credit for that. We just ask if there are any questions that people have, to just ask us, and we'll let them know. But our main intent is that the information that's being provided is really accurate and of the highest caliber.
Bruce, let me just say in response to Tamara's question too, that you know, we get a lot of, because we're on, you know, on the Climate Literacy Network and Federalists and all those kinds of things too, Scuttlebutt, so on, we do get information about lots of great opportunities, and if we think they're worthy, then Bruce will send them out in the email, so people know if it comes in the email, they're kind of, you know, they kind of get the seal of approval, so to speak. So they do get lots of information about opportunities, and we do want them to take advantage of everything, because there's a lot out there right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so for example,
are you looking for things that are mostly science talks, or could it be science education talks?
Yes.
Yes, to both.
No, we do both, because we certainly, you know, we have some folks that are at the high school level and at the university level who are primarily mm-hmm. looking for additional science content and data to present mm-hmm. to their students, as well as for their own personal knowledge. And we have other educators who are really at the elementary or middle school level, who are really just trying to understand the basics and then how they might best convey that to their students.
Yeah, I was just going to suggest, as you probably know, is we record these, so there's probably a number of these Climate Literacy Network telecons that we recorded in the slides rep that you could have people could use. I mean,
yeah,
Laura Tenenbaum's would be a good example of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway,
right.
I'm sure you might have thought of that before, but I just thought I'd mention it.
Oh, well, thank you. We'll double check our resources list, which is quite extensive now after 3 years, and just
yeah.
make sure that the Climate Literacy Network is in there. But certainly, I do forward many of the professional development resources that come through CLN listserv, which I receive. Excuse me. So in addition to them developing their climate stewardship project, we do have our main area of focus. We have an online wiki, which is password protected, and we find that our educators feel very comfortable with the fact that we have a password protected wiki for them to use, so that they really do feel free in terms of expressing themselves and not feeling as though, you know, they might be you know, what they have or what they're doing in their classrooms or in their district might sort of be mistaken for anything other than what it is, which is to provide their students with really just good quality information and data in the proper way. And we just ask for, you know, regular participation. We're really developing a community of learning, and we really are finding now that the educators are working very well in terms of trying to collaborate with each other on their ideas and concepts. And if we go to slide number 9, we just show some of the basic benefits for their participants. For all active participants, meaning they're participating in the monthly webinars, they're interacting with their regional leaders, their regional coordinators. Updating their personal wiki pages, noting their professional development and sort of what they're doing with climate change. We allow for applications for mini grants for funding, depending on financial availability. We have in the past provided travel stipends to attend and present at conferences. We had three or four of our climate stewards presented AGU just this in December, as well as at NSTA. And we actually, when we can, we try and have some special contests. We actually just ran a video contest last year for educators, and we're hoping to run another one this year.
Bruce, this is Anna Gold. I have a question about the wiki page.
Yeah.
We found that it's hard to encourage educators to take the time to actually post and use, like, online communication tools. So do you require, is that something because you have such a strong community, they want to communicate to each other via the wiki, or how do you facilitate this?
Well, it's a couple of things. One is that it's a requirement. We develop a personal wiki page for every participant in the program. And then our regional leaders have been really wonderful in hosting telecons as well as online chats that and provide one-on-one assistance with just sort of using the technology itself. And then many of the regional leaders also have online sort of chats that are embedded within the wiki, you know, some in the regional wiki pages themselves. So we really do try and get the participants to go to the wiki as often as possible. So when we have webinars and we have notes, we post them to the wiki, and then we, you know, we'll send out an email. Not with notes, but we'll let people know, just as you do, that, oh, notes are up on the wiki, you know, presentations are up on the wiki, you need to go to it. The regional leaders will post updates of professional development and opportunities on the wiki pages, so we really try and get them there as often as possible. And the regional leaders have been wonderful about just trying to work with people.
Excuse me, I had a question about, you mentioned that each participant had their own wiki page. Are they able to view all the wiki pages of the other participants in the whole program or just their region? Or
they can view
can
everything.
They view the other?
Yes, and we encourage it.
We
do, because we tell people to post that we have an outline, for a template for individuals to develop and present stewardship plans as well as results on their personal wiki pages. And we actually encourage individuals to go and look at others' wiki pages. So we have wiki pages. The wiki is organized by regions, and then we have individual wiki pages are actually organized by states within that region. So individuals
Nice.
Might find that they have a colleague who's actually not too far away that they may wish to collaborate with, or they may wish to work on an issue of specific regional interest, such as in the Southwest drought, for example.
Yeah, this can really facilitate collaboration. This is at whatever level they're comfortable with. That's great.
Exactly. Yeah. Our only requirement is that they. That they continue to some degree to continue to update their pages regularly, because one aspect of working with this wiki is that whenever there isn't an update to it, one gets a notification.
Uh-huh.
And that's actually really helpful. They can get a notification digest, say weekly or even monthly, and they can look at the activity that occurs. So when, for example, PEG posts an update about the book club on the book club sort of forum section of the wiki, they get a notification. They say, oh, well, I want to check that out. They just pop over to it because they want to be involved in the book club, or they see that their regional leader has posted an update regarding their stewardship project. They may say, oh, well, I want to check that out, too.
Bruce, I might mention that when they do apply for the mini-grant, they apply on their wiki. So they post their stewardship plan on the wiki.
Correct.
So that's another, you know, if you want money, you have to fill out your form online.
Yes.
It's not something you email us.
It really facilitates review as well.
Mm-hmm. And everybody can see everybody else's stewardship project ideas, too.
If we go to slide 10, you actually can sort of see that that front page of the wiki, and it's pretty much your standard wiki. And you see we just have a section for announcements at the very top. We have the next section, which is the various regions that will take you into these whole other sections of the wiki. This is followed by important project documents, project evaluation. Sections. It's pretty extensive. We've worked quite a while on it, getting it updated. And the best thing is, it's a wiki. People, if anyone sees anything that they feel like is important, they want to share, they want to add, they can do it. And it really gives them a lot of power, which we like. It really empowers the educators. If we go to our next slide, slide 11. That just gives you some idea of the monthly webinars, the professional development that we're providing to them. We've had some wonderful talks by, actually multiple talks by Susan, by Andy. We've had Chief Scientist of NOAA Co-op, Stephen Gill, has given us a great talk on sea level change, and Education Coordinator for Coral Reef Conservation Program. Dr. Paula Morin has given us some great talks on ocean acidification. We've really tried to work across the scope of NOAA as well as many other organizations that are doing really fine work, and try to expose our climate stewards to a real range of subjects. And actually, we're just this week finishing up the hopefully the remainder of our talks for, well, not completely, but we're tying down many of our talks for 2013. And what we've done is that in late December we actually sent out a needs assessment to both a needs assessment and a climate change knowledge pretest via our evaluator to all of our new 2013 educators who are coming in, and based upon the results of both of those surveys, we actually did a bit of a gap analysis and how areas of climate change that folks were a little bit weak on, as well as sort of what they wanted to know and how they wanted to know it in their needs assessment, and that's sort of how we're now coming up with our schedule for 2013, and it's proven to be, I think it's going to be a great year ahead. On the next slide, slide 12. Oh, does anybody have any questions?
Yeah.
Okay. Slide 12. We've tried very much to encourage, even if we can't provide stipends to attend NSTA, which is one of our larger conferences during the year. We are trying very hard to promote climate change science and climate change education at NSTA, and encouraging members of NOAA Climate Stewards to attend. These are just some of the activities that we're going to be hosting, as well as working with at NSTA. We're really looking forward to our symposium, as well as our workshops, and we have an entire day of sessions that are going to be focusing on using data in the classroom. These are just great opportunities for everyone. And, you know, certainly we would like, these to be, promoted through many networks as possible. Peg, do you want to say anything about
Just that the Climate Change Live is with the U.S. Forest Service, and that the Lessons from Antarctica is with Linda Morris and the U.S. Ice Core Drilling Program. So there's actually there are many other additional climate workshops or presentations going on. I would say twice as many as listed here. Mm. We just didn't have room to put them all on the slide, but we do have a half-page ad in the program, if you'll see it, that lists all the different climate-related opportunities at NSTA this year.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, even just doing a very quick search of NOAA, one of the things that will be noted was that even though they might not necessarily say climate in in their titles, there are lots of folks across NOAA with education who are going to be giving presentations that do have climate involved with them. And I guess, let's see.
Could you talk about the regional workshops, and then I'll talk
yeah, absolutely.
About the platforms.
Yeah, and the in our we've actually held on in 2012. We were able to sponsor regional workshops, so that we were able to get climate stewards together face to face. Some very very successful meetings at the Aldo Leopold Nature Center, and I believe Margaret Mooney was actually very involved in working with our regional leader there. Our regional leaders actually worked to sort of set and organize these whole things, and they were really quite good. And what was unique about the event in Flagstaff in particular was that because of the great distances and people couldn't necessarily travel, a lot of it was done via webinar, but groups of people were able to get together in some in Hawaii and some in Arizona and some in some other locations, I think Utah, just face to face. It was pretty cool. And actually, this year we're hoping we're planning for a traditional environmental knowledge workshop that's going to be held for the Mid-Atlantic region in April, and we're actually also planning, I believe it's in July, to head back to Wisconsin for an additional traditional environmental knowledge workshop. And Peg, why don't you take it from here?
I just would mention that one of the highlights of both of those traditional environmental knowledge workshops that we're having, both here in the Mid-Atlantic and then also northern Wisconsin, is a book called Children of the Seventh Fire, and it's an ancient prophecy from the Ojibwe tribe about the changes that are going on. And so it is very much a book about change and sustainability, and so that will be one of the highlights of both of those multi-day workshops.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then slide 14, I would just tell you that we've dabbled using virtual platforms. We had a virtual climate conference in the fall of 2012 over 3 evenings, and before that we had several evenings of training sessions, because a lot of people, especially older teachers, do not know how to use virtual platforms, have never used an avatar, for example. And Second Life is just one of the platforms that is available. There's a lot of work being done now in a platform called Unity rather than Second Life. But just to let you know that we found that using virtual platforms was good. It's an intermediate interface between telecons, which are, you hear and you don't see, to face-to-face, you hear and see, to virtual platforms, you have an alternate person that you move, but you can talk to that person that's standing next to you with a headset. So we employed Raytheon, who helped us do the training, and then we used their conference center. You can see it there on slide 14. You can see their virtual conference center that we used for presentations, discussion groups, breakout rooms, and so on. We also did tours of things like the NOAA Island. We did a treasure hunt, and we tooled around a little bit. And you can see the geographic spread of the people who were at that conference. And we talked, the primary content was climate, but this could be useful for any other kind of content as well. Then in 15, we took that one step further. Once they finished the virtual climate conference, we invited people to be part of a monthly get-together. And so we gathered at this one climate island shelter, which was on the edge of a very nice blue ocean. And we would have book discussion groups, and then we also did field trips to other sites that are available on Second Life. There's over, 19 science and technology communities, including the Exploratorium in San Francisco. There's 80 nature and park sites, 16 underwater sites, and 71 education sites. So we tooled around and looked at a few of those sites during our field trip time on a monthly basis.
This is Tamara. How do you decide whether to use Second Life or the Unity platform?
Well, Second Life, Unity, you have to download the little player, and you have to have specific programs developed for that. Second Life is a lot more open, so you can just, take advantage of other people's development. In Unity, you have to have somebody that has developed something in particular that you want to download and see.
So what have you used Unity for?
We have not used Unity at all in the Climate Stewards. But there,
okay.
So you've only
used Second Life so far?
So far, yes. Yes. But there's a lot of people that are moving away from Second Life because the population base is declining, and it does have a very steep curve for learning. So we did have book discussions here, but we have now, because of the steep learning curve and the technical issues with the sound, we've taken our book discussions off Second Life now, and we just do it via telecon, which can sometimes be an issue. We've got 67 people signed up for our book discussions now on a monthly basis. Although Bruce said that last night, we only had 20 people show up. That's still a nice number for discussion. But the nice thing about Second Life is that you actually, you can talk to the person next to you, or you can go off and have a private conversation, or you can have breakout groups, and you can't really do that on a telecon.
I have to say one caveat about last night, though, which is I actually got about 10 emails apologizing and explaining why people couldn't show up, and they were very good reasons, like being in Antarctica doing research.
Are the book discussions, field trips, open just to the climate stewards, or is this a separate program?
This is just for climate stewards right now.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, do you want to talk about the stewardship project development and show a couple examples of what they did, and we'll have to wrap up here pretty quickly?
Yes. Actually, if you go to slide number 16, and what we have is that this is just one example of a rubric which we have developed with the through two working sessions, an initial working session, and then the following year a revision, a rubric to provide to climate stewards for developing their stewardship projects. And we cover many, many areas, a specific climate science issue, a hypothesis that they're going to be creating, the type of data collection that they're going to be doing and how they might be analyzing it, the specific stewardship process and activities they're going to be doing, their actions, NOAA resources and partner resources that they might be using, how they're going to evaluate their process, and then when they're done, conclusions that they may have reached, as well as any formal presentations that they may have been creating. We really want them to try and think through this. But even though we've sort of made this very detailed, we've made it detailed to provide them with a very detailed template. One thing that we do stress, because we know that we have some, educators who are relatively newer educators, or maybe elementary educators, and that we don't want them to overthink it. We want them to really be able to work with their students and engage them at a level that they feel comfortable with. We really want to try and empower them with the knowledge and the capability to make a difference, and to not only for themselves, but also for their students. And if we go to And this rubric is actually set up in a way on each of their wiki pages so that they can just sort of go in and sort of fill out the template as they, you know, as they're thinking about their project. Here are just some examples of on slide number 17 of some of the stewardship that they that folks have engaged in. We've had restorations with beech grasses down in Louisiana. At the Hoagley Zoo in Utah, there was a remarkably successful project through Polar Bear Challenge. I believe it was something like over 7,500 students were impacted through this project, and I think they estimated that they had a carbon sort of net savings of like 53 metric tons. It was quite ridiculous. It was wonderful. You know, we've had educators that have worked with international groups creating a model UN climate change summit with middle school students, which is where I believe that a quote came from on the first slide, where there were students taking the roles of both politicians and other students that were taking the roles of scientists. And, you know, over the course of a number of weeks, recognizing how difficult it was for these two groups to come together on consensus and why the process is a lot harder than many people sort of feel it should be. There have been folks who have done climate change impacts on wetlands and taking a look at paleo climate data and even doing some very specific things such as schoolyard gardens where students in areas of Prince George's County in Maryland are just learning about eating foods locally, the carbon that's related to sort of growing foods locally versus having them shipped in, and they're using their school gardens for other things like just learning about nutrition. Folks in the mathematics classes are tying them in. It's been really, really wonderful, and we've got some great folks who are out in Hawaii who are able to, you know, take their students like right down to the beach, and they're doing some really neat things, learning about ocean acidification with corals. So some really great activities. Something that's been very successful just right here in the D.C. area, if you go to slide number 19, is you know, here you just see a picture of one of the results of some students who were taking, you know, some very, very specific measurements of emissions from vehicles. The students at a school in Washington decided that they wanted to try and reduce emissions from cars that were idling in front of their schools. And the teacher put in for a mini grant to get some probes that they could use to try and environmental probes to try and collect some samples. And they just did a great job of engagement list, and this really came from the students with the focus of the teacher, so it was terrific.
This is Tamara. I have another quick question here. You described a whole range of projects. Or is there a mix as to whether the stewards do this within the context of a classroom and a class day and a curriculum, or in informal settings, or on their own with their neighborhood kids?
It runs the gamut. It really does. We find that the majority of the climate stewards are doing this within a formal education setting, but that's the majority. There's also a smaller group which is working in informal settings such as zoos or nature centers, but the process itself is still formalized. Is that, does that help?
Yeah.
But we don't have sort of any folks just for the most part just doing this out in their community mostly. Peg, do you want to just take over the program evaluation with the?
Yeah, sure. And I would just mention, just to add to that, there's a few people that are doing it in after-school programs as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So do teachers have a hard time integrating it into their curriculum if they teach it with their classroom students?
You know, that's actually one of the that's actually one of the top items that came up in our needs assessment, which is getting assistance in terms of figuring out how they might best integrate. And what we try and do is we try and direct the educators to resources, education resources, for example, education resources on the Clean Network website that have been vetted that really have very good ties to the science standards at various grade levels, so that they are able, as much as possible, to just plug those things into what they would normally be doing.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Just a reflection. I happen to read some of the regional directors' summaries and our needs assessment. It seems to me that there's a slow trend towards educators wanting to know, okay, I get it. It's happening. Climate change is happening. I'm starting to understand a little more about climate. So what do we do about it? And how do I incorporate this into the classroom? And
mm-hmm.
and how do I measure that I've had an impact? So we get a lot of questions on, okay, I'm not sure what to do for stewardship. And then once I get an idea about stewardship, how do I measure that I have the outcome that I'm supposed to,
mm-hmm.
trying to get?
Yeah,
those are
great questions.
Yeah,
yeah.
The whole idea of this is like action research for the,
mm-hmm.
right, the educator, and educators aren't as well practiced at that strategy as, you know, some of us
might
think
they are. But
it sounds
like the structure of the next generation science standards feeds right into
yes.
enabling your program to be a big piece of it. So
yes.
A lot of in-classroom kinds of things.
Right, right. So we'll have to, we'll be working on that in the future. In fact, we're in the process of trying to work on a module that would take some of that, some of the climate change impacts, and try to weave it into some of the, the ideas from the framework.
Mm-hmm.
Just a final few notes on the evaluation on slide 19. You'll note that we really have two major research questions. We have Hillary Davis, who has been our evaluator from the beginning, and we're looking at whether they have an increase in their content knowledge, and to what extent have they increased their content knowledge, and then also how has the implementation of their project, impacted their attitude and behavior. And then we also asked them to evaluate their stewardship project, too. And in slide 20, you'll see a whole list of instruments we have. We employ not only for their participants, but we make available for the participants to use with their student population or their community population, so they can actually do their own research and impact for their stewardship project. So you'll see this list here. And Bruce mentioned the needs assessment that we used, which is slide 21. And we ask all of the new class to fill out a needs assessment to find out why they applied. And these are the four bullets for why this year's class wanted to be part of our climate stewards group. And you see increasing their understanding of NOAA resources for a second, but they didn't. I don't even see climate on here. So it's interesting. I think we're starting to see a shift. And in slide 22, you'll see the topics that they're interested in, and you'll see, well, they want basic climate literacy. You see that second bullet there, what people can do about climate change. That's what they want to know, what people can do. They want to know what they can do. Their students want to know what they can do. And then you'll see on the side there other topics of interest, citizen science, monitoring programs, energy reduction. All of those are things that they're indicating an interest in that we'll try to provide them some information for. So I think we're starting to see some action-oriented educators, which is really great. Slide 23, again, the class of 2013, their needs assessment, here's what they're interested in learning about when it comes to teaching and learning, and that's critical thinking, field experiences for investigations, infusing climate content, real-time data, and again, this goes back to that NGSS. This is what they're looking for. They're focusing on incorporating all of those science and engineering practices, the cross-cutting concepts, and the disciplinary core ideas into what they're doing in the classroom. And on slide 24, here are the challenges. It's something for us as a community to be cognizant of. Challenges of teaching climate science, at least for the class of 2013, that 140 new educators. I think. Is that right, Bruce? 140?
For 2013?
Yeah.
Oh, we have
160?
200.
Well, no, the new ones.
Oh, I apologize. I believe we accepted, yes, 140 new educators.
Yeah. So 100, basically 100 people said that their biggest challenge, of course, is time and resources. That's nothing new for educators. equipment knowledge in alignment with curriculum standards, I think, is going to start bubbling to the top. And then the community, how to work with community members. Bruce, you want to add anything on the needs assessment? Okay. And I think Bruce already mentioned that, you know, we've taken that needs assessment, and now Bruce has mapped out some webinars based on that needs assessment. And in slide 25, then Hillary takes the evaluation data and crunches the numbers, and then you'll see here in slide 25, 26, some of the evaluation results from the class of 2011, which was just finished last fall. And this is the what they reported, that this project has a strong effect on stewardship. If they did a stewardship project, they felt very strongly that they could make a difference, that they learned more about climate science, they're ready to apply what they've learned, they have an increased awareness of climate science careers, and meeting other people interested in climate science. So when we just mentioned that the climate content questions, we use the Yale study questions, the Yale climate questions as our baseline. Slide 26, indicators of success. This is what the class of 2011 said were the positive parts of the evaluation of climate stewards, and we're very happy with the project, so we're continuing it in the face of potential budget cuts and hoping that we can continue to do a lot with very little.
Oh, and by the way, just for those of you who are thinking about, well, what happened to the class of 2012, it turns out that we've just, because it's a relatively new program, we're finding out through experience that it's taking roughly about 18 months for folks to get to the point through the professional development and the stewardship stewardship project process before we're at a point where we can really do that sort of follow-up sort of post-evaluation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because of the stewardship project.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they have to get the 15 hours, then they apply for a stewardship mini-grant, then they do the stewardship project, and then we find out, you know, what were the impacts.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Well, we are just at the top of the hour. Mm-hmm. People did ask questions along the way, so you have Peg and Bruce's content information at the end of the slide if you have further questions. It's a fabulous project. I've learned a whole lot, actually, about it. I've known about it for a while, but I've learned a whole lot more now. So thank you very much for your presentation.
Our pleasure.
Absolutely. Pleasure.
And thank you for the quote from the sixth grade student about being proactive. That is so awesome.
Could we not just teach that to everybody?
Yeah. That's
absolutely
a great quote.
If we only listen to the kids more often.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.